Thank you. This is the 17th lecture, 3rd Joburg ACC, Friday, 17 February, AD 11, and it happens to be the last lecture of this ACC. And the reason it's the last lecture is because all cases are moving. You may not be aware of this, even in the ACC, but the last stuck tone arm was dispensed with as of yesterday. We're used to having this happen on the Thursday of the sixth week. Now, this is approximately 30 hours of auditing because you had HAS co-audit processes the first week and so forth, and because there has also been some drills and you've been subjected to a bit of accustom yourself to. Probably the effective auditing here is about 30 hours at this point. And this is quite remarkable. These cases have started to move on the tone arm on the data that is contained in these lectures. Nothing extraordinary has been added on the part of the instructors. Although, on two or three of these cases, it has required a considerable attention to the auditing and the case being done. Two of the cases had rather strenuous withholds or secrets or secret beliefs or goals or something of the sort, and they were hang fire right up to the time when those things were produced. So it's still on a sort of a withhold basis, but the withhold is the goal or condition. And I suppose you can add to your repertoire the fact that a secret condition of the case could be a reason for case non-progress. We haven't anybody here with a secret condition, but we did have somebody who secretly believed something that they were holding on to desperately. Believed something about themselves that they just thought they'd better not mention. So you can say a secret condition. You can think of lots of conditions which a PC would maintain as secret to you. They'd be withholds. They'd come under the heading of just general withholds, but part of withholds would be a condition as far as the PC is concerned. Another withhold, classification of withhold, would be goal. And we have a new spread here. Instead of just saying withhold, the PC has a withhold, we could classify the withhold. In other words, there are apparently types of withholds. And that is a relatively new discovery made in this ACC. There's a withheld goal, and there is a withheld condition. Now, to that, just to be very specific, we could say that there's a withheld belief, and in the 22nd American, which was running on a little stagger, but concurrently with this one, there was a withheld decision held up a case. So here's a little scale all by itself. You can classify withholds, and this makes it much easier for you to ask for withholds if you know that there are these various types of withholds above and beyond just withholds. Now, the three cases took off very low response cases, took off and are doing splendidly, or were, on concentrated attention and shift of attention, that particular process, and so forth. Got three cases here moving. Apparently, one would say that that undercut failed help. And that's just a guess. Nothing else extraordinary occurred. Nothing that hasn't already been covered in these lectures. Now, I want to discuss with you just a little bit more the use of the pre-having the scale, that being the newest thing in this ACC. And one of the students already went exploring and ran a PTP by finding the terminals of the PTP and assessing the chief terminal on the prehab scale and running the prehab scale against the PTP. Of course, that is possible. Anything you have in the past run as a terminal could be run again on the prehab scale. Any terminal could be run on the prehab scale for any condition. In other words, the auditor could be run on the prehab scale. You know, you got an ARC break with the auditor, and model session calls for so-and-so, but this doesn't seem to go anyplace. Well, let's assess the auditor on the prehab scale and run it. Interesting idea, huh? PC has an awful time leveling. This doesn't tell you to jump off the model session instantly. It just says if you're just having trouble with this thing, it keeps coming up all the time. We can say the thing to do with it would be to assess on the prehab scale the terminal with which the PC is having a lot of PT trouble. In other words, you can convert the rudiments over to a terminal, assess it on the prehab scale, and get rid of the thing. Now, that, of course, wasn't a new idea generated in this class. This was more of an excursion on what you can do with terminals. You can do anything with terminals. There's all kinds of things you can do with terminals. Terminals are terminals. You run a dynamic assessment or any other kind of an assessment on a PC, and you find a terminal that's astray. Well, you can run it in numerous ways. You could say, well, what about that terminal would you be willing to confront? What about that terminal would you rather not confront? You could do that. Not very successful, but can be run. You could handle psychosomatic difficulties in this particular fashion. The PC comes up with a big goal. He wants to get over his stomach quiver, one of the roughest of the rough. I haven't tested this, but I'm sure it'd work. You just assess his stomach on the prehab scale. Now, the scale, of course, has innumerable uses. I call to your attention, the scale is probably not complete. But we haven't found any necessity from an auditing standpoint to put any... We haven't found it necessary to find missing pieces. The scale, in its original release form that I gave you in this ACC, was adequate and succeeded in moving all cases on the 22nd American. So the 22nd American, 2 weeks before its end or thereabouts, had all cases moving too, which is quite an achievement. And that was done on the most elementary form of the prehab scale. They didn't even have the commands. They just had the prehab scale. That was all they had. So, you see, we can, of course, go ahead and complicate this scale, and we can drag it out and look it over and so forth, but we're actually, to some degree, wasting time because the thing is already proven effective. However, there's always that case down in East London or Manchester that seems to elude it all. And possibly some additional addition to the prehab scale in the future might possibly make it possible to scoop up this case, too. Now, cases, however, don't move because you have some brand new technology. The bulk of cases, brand new technology is usually aimed at undercutting the results of yesterday. And those have gone up from the 22.5% of the witch doctor, the 10% of the psychiatrist, something on the order of about 50% of Dianetics, on up here until we're apparently ticking off that you can do easily and so forth. Somewhere around about 95% or something like this. We're way up. But this requires a considerably well-trained auditor and so forth, so I'd say the field percentage, even when this data is released, probably will be about 80%. But that's still very high. They've still got an HGC they can send people to crack the remaining 20. That's no joke. That's what HGCs normally do. They get all the rough cases. Once upon a time, I got all the rough cases. I didn't know what an easy case looked like for about 2 or 3 years. I got nothing but rough ones. And the HGC has taken that hat for me and is wearing it very well. Now, auditing, just as a summary here, depends basically on good TRs, following the auditor's code, and knowing the most effective rundowns, the uses of the material. And those are the most important things there. But next to that is, of course, now we get to the technical aspects. What's the most important about the technical? And we find, first and foremost, it's the rudiments. We find they are the most important as far as cracking cases are concerned. When there is something wrong with the rudiments, nothing else happens. Now, if it takes you 75 hours to clear up the rudiments on a case, I'd say you were awful slow, but I wouldn't curse you. I'd say this is painful. I'd say you must have sat there with the E-meter under your chair most of the time. You couldn't possibly have been looking at the thing. But nevertheless, I wouldn't become profane on the subject. At least you learned that you should cover your rudiments. Might have driven your PC. Every 3 hours of auditing, you had to run 4 hours of auditing on ARC breaks with the auditor. But nevertheless, you did the rudiments, so that's fine. You learned your lesson. I'm very happy with you, okay? Now, next to this is doing the rudiments cleverly. And I will applaud you very, very loudly if you can do the rudiments cleverly and swiftly. The next point on auditing is the handling of a model session. Handling a model session very well, very smoothly, and so that your auditor actually gets the benefit of duplication of sessions, because sessions run with a perfect model session, run out former sessions. And you don't have auditing parking somebody on the time track if good model session is used. You run into this yourself. You don't really start running into it until you've been auditing on a model session for, 75 or 100 hours, something like this. All of a sudden, you begin to realize the first sessions you had have vanished. They have been erased by subsequent sessions. This has nothing to do with what is being run. Just the fact that the session script is being followed carefully and consistently makes a duplication of sessions. Now, this makes it possible, or rather, I should say, more possible, to change auditors. It is a faux pas to change auditors in any event, at any time. A change of auditors is a poor thing. The auditor's code, as I mentioned just a moment ago, is vitally important. There is nothing that you have right now that violates any part of the auditor's code. The auditor's code applies to the whole works. Changes of auditors, auditing too late at night, and auditing without the PC having eaten anything have been the single sources of spinning people with auditing. Nobody's been spun with auditing for 6 or 7 years, but way back in 1951, when we were getting a lot of randomity, we had an oil man, since defunct, who was making raids on us, trying to steal all of Dianetics and so forth. This has been a rocky road, by the way. Anytime anybody sits around and pretends it's all been calm, cool, and collected, well, that's just maintained for public presence. Back of that facade, there's a lot of motion. And these three things, those were the things that really spun people. So those things remain in the auditor's code. Of course, auditing is what you can get away with. Your own instructor at 2 minutes of 10 says, I'm not in violation of the auditor's code, and starts auditing the ISOCSEC down here. See, so that was legal. That was legal. 2 minutes of 10. Of course, they continued the session on until 2 a.m. or something, but you'll find a lot of auditors who have a great many administrative or other actions and who aren't professionally auditing, sometimes don't get around to auditing somebody who needs auditing desperately until 10 o'clock. Auditing is what you can get away with. But you would never, under any circumstances, audit somebody with a neurotic or psychotic history after 10 o'clock. You understand? Never. Because that was part of the spin. What happens there, by the way, just as a word of warning, is the individual is already too weary because the cycle of alertness of the body has begun to deteriorate. And he's already too weary, and you'll find that he's less and less responsive. Comes 11 o'clock, and you now are having a hard time trying to get the case into some kind of shape to end a session, see? And so you try to, and it's 12 o'clock, and the case is less able to end the session. And it's 1 o'clock, here you go. You see what happens? Case isn't up to being audited in the first place, usually. Which brings us back to other things that you could do for cases that are very, very bad off. But let me finish this up. The data we have on havingness, on confront, and it's finding the havingness process, finding the confront process, getting a case started with the pre-havingness scale. The formulas, don't forget the formulas, formulas 13 and 15, particularly 15, are terribly important to the Scientologist. And the formula that has to do with control is very important. But 15 and 13 stand out as of tremendous importance. There'll be many cases you won't get started out in the field and so forth without 15. There's some kind of a jerk down in Durban. I don't know what his name is, Hickshaw or something of the sort. And he has something to do with a newspaper. He's a janitor or something. And if you were ever so foolish as to save this fellow's bacon for him, of course, you'd have to go in with Formula 15. Because he has overts against the terminals of Scientology. Therefore, Scientology will not help him if he has overts. Why? Why? Won't help him if he has overts. Now look, overts are below help, aren't they? The thing is just staring you straight in the face on the pre-havingness scale. Obviously, the person who has overts against the terminals of Dianetics and Scientology wouldn't move without Formula 15. Well, there was one such case in the third Joburg ACC. Had overts on an auditor. And that was enough to park the case. You talk about mechanisms that are self-protective for Scientologists. Well, that's one of them. You can almost say to somebody, okay, go out and hit me if you don't want a case gain from here on out. I'll tell all of my friends not to ever run Formula 15 on you. I can see in some future existence somebody sitting morbidly in some corner or another, just having found out that he was somebody who gave us an awful lot of trouble, you see. They all of a sudden say, oh no, no wonder it doesn't work. No wonder I'm the only aberrated person left on this planet. Of course, you find such a person and so forth, it's up to you whether you continue the session or not. the weapons which you have are not very hard to use. And as such, they are quite teachable. Now, you may at first glance think that it's complicated just because there's so much. For instance, there are 36 havingness processes. There are 36 confront processes. Actually, now 37, because you've got to add that attention thing to the confront processes. There are, I haven't counted them, but probably about 30 levels of scale when we finally whip this thing out. Now, that looks complicated, doesn't it? So this tells you what the foremost important action is. You've got all this stuff written down. You should know it by heart. You will one day. But the most important action, then, is unfortunately assessment. This has not been easy to teach auditors. Assessment has not been easy to teach. But when I tell you now that you won't get much more than about, well, at the absolute outside, 50% case gain with Scientology, that is 50% of the people that you try to work on, without knowing how to do an E-meter assessment, the whole remainder of the cases that you're going to get gains on totally depend on an E-meter assessment and the use of an E-meter. Why, you will see that it's worthwhile concentrating on and getting used to that meter. Familiarity is the best thing with a meter. Just familiarity. I taught some people to clear check, by the way, just by getting them to clear check people who weren't clear for a while. Just keep grabbing people who weren't clear and giving them clear checks. And then they get a hold of somebody who was, and you get an immediate, wow. You see, it's just the familiarity. It's like my friend Paul says, the best way to learn how to use a camera is just keep shooting pictures. You know, just shoot tremendous numbers of pictures. Any marksman will tell you that the best way to fire off and learn to shoot a weapon, of course, is just to shoot the weapon and get continuous practice on shooting a weapon. Somebody can show you how to assemble them and load them and point them and groove them in and drill with them, but in the final analysis, if you've never shot one, the chances of your hitting anything are quite slight. World War II, I was much alarmed. My whole secondary anti-aircraft battery that used up 600 rounds per minute per gun was allowed 365 rounds per gun to be shot in for structural firing and training the crews. I didn't expect to hit anything with those batteries. In other words, there was something on the order, after you'd structurally fired them and so forth, of about 20 seconds of battle left. You had 20 seconds worth of ammunition and you were all through from there on. Interesting. Well, we robbed the battleship Washington of 10,000 rounds, but that's another story. The way to learn how to use an E-meter is to use an E-meter. Now, oddly enough, modern meters are sufficiently accurate, 1 meter to the next, that you can actually lay one down, pick another one up, and go on with it without too much bother. Homemade meters, which we discourage, by the way, because their standardization is poor. Nobody ever really understands how to standardize these things. I have to standardize them myself personally in order to get you a good meter. You pick up 1 meter, and it responds so-and-so and so-and-so, and you get used to that one. You pick up another one, and it's so entirely different that you don't get anything out of it. In the early days of E-meters, they were so individual, one to the next meter, that you never could quite understand what was going to happen if you picked up a strange meter. And as a result, there was a great deal of queasiness in mind about this. But to some degree, even this obtains on the modern meter, simply because they have different colored faces and so forth, and maybe the sensitivity knob on a later mark model is a little bit changed, or the sensitivity slightly different on this. The best thing to do is to have your own meter and learn it very well, get very used to it, and give the electrodes to lots of people. Now, down in Durban, we've got to have a drill that we call newspaper reporter deter. And that simply consists of the fellow comes romping in and says, you know, standard newspaper reporter. You know what they dramatize, don't you? It's worry everybody. That's all they're dramatizing. People don't even buy newspapers because of it. Because the papers that worry people most are the first to go out of circulation, by the way, in the United States. Papers that just settle down and give you what's happening, why they're still there. The whole Hearst chain, yellow journalism, has been wiped out. But anyway, is after he's come in, you shoot him through the test lines, and before he can open his mouth, you put the electrodes in his hands and find an engram. Interiorize him into it, step on his head and push him further into it, shake him by the hand and let him walk out the door. He's trying obsessively to reach you. Well, we have ways of reaching him. Don't ever explain anything to him. Very effective. Now, and of course, if you can't reach an engram or anything of the sort, just start discussing the last time he was in an insane asylum. You find he probably was. A personally owned e-meter is much more satisfactory. You know that it works. You have confidence in it. You're used to it. And I get pretty cross if somebody starts using my e-meters too much, or if my e-meter starts going into circulation, because I notice differences of reaction. They're very faint, but even on an assembly line meter. Why, it's run down in battery a bit since the last time I've had it, you know? Or somebody has been eating chocolate before they grabbed onto the electrodes. Or small annoyances. Or they didn't know how to close the box, and it's now got a sprung hinge or something, you know. But by and large, the operation is fairly similar. The early carbon pot e-meters of the British series and all of the American meters, and I think all of the meters that were manufactured here in South Africa up to middle 1960, occasionally require a shot of lighter fluid, by the way. You shoot some lighter fluid into the pot and move the tone arm around savagely for a little while. The bits of dust and so forth that accumulate in there disappear. Otherwise, you're liable to get a meter that does nothing but rock slam. It just jitters. It isn't reading the PC. And you have to assure yourself that your meter is reading the PC. And that it does register something in the PC. And you have to build up your confidence with the meter. And finally, why, you won't even notice you have a meter on your lap. I mean, the meter's just there. You're used to it. You can run it, the thing, you hardly even are staring at it, you know, and the needle goes, does something or other, and you know it. And it adds in a part of your knowingness rather than in part of your investigatingness. Because you investigate with an e-meter consistently and continually, the e-meter at first tends to hang out of your zone of knowingness, and you're, to some slight degree, kind of investigating the meter at the same time you're investigating the PC, and it's all part of a big investigatory problem. Well, that e-meter is part of your knowingness area. And if you know them well, and if you know your meter particularly well, why, you'll be very relieved, and when it tells you something, it tells you something. You weren't on a big question mark as to whether or not that was true. Now, there's an ample supply of e-meters available any place, except in South Africa. And that's because the government won't let them in. And not because they find anything wrong with e-meters, but it's just they are in an economic bind whereby they don't want to import too much electronics goods. So we're going to build them internally in South Africa, so you'll have lots of e-meters. We've already started to work out a long line on that. A good piece of news for you. They will be a standard meter, assembly lined, and I will have checked it out to make sure that it's in perfect condition. It'll probably be a little bit better than the old run e-meters because we'll fancy it up, give it all the latest frills and friggles, and we may even do the secret that prevents it from drifting so that your e-meter is reading clear at the end of session without resetting. Now, I don't know what you could do with auditing if you couldn't assess. And if you don't learn assessment on an e-meter, I would say these developments, which have proven most telling in handling that above 50% number of cases and getting, of course, the 50% of the cases moving much faster, has all been with these three scales in order of development: the havingness scale and the confront scale and then the pre-havingness scale. And those three scales have made all the difference in the world. Well, that means that assessment is what is doing the work. So you should become very skilled at assessment. Just as I was teaching people to clear check by getting them to check people up who weren't clear, why, you might make it a sort of a parlor game to do a lot of assessment. Now, assessment could be any use of an e-meter trying to find out what's wrong with the PC. That's good enough. Just try to find out what's wrong with your friends. A lot of little assists are very, very welcome to your friends. Prying into their private activities aren't, but assists are. And you can do some interesting assists with an e-meter. Most noteworthy of these assists is target has a headache. You want to know when the headache turned on and what your assist target was doing at that moment. And you will find out what turns on headaches for this person. And then, simply by discharging that charge today, you see, I mean, not go back any place, just today's contact with that restimulator, getting rid of that restimulator, you get rid of the headache. It's an assist. And doing an assist with an e-meter of this character is quite interesting. Now, you could go deeper than this, and you can find out, you find this out, of course, you've got the class of things that turns on this headache. And you can knock this headache out from there on out, if you want to, by doing a Dianetic assist pre-session 38. It's quite interesting. It works very well. And if you were to do quite a few of those things, well, you'd get your hand in on seeing various people's reactions on this sort of thing. Use of the meter, familiarity with the meter. Now, even people who have used the meter for a while aren't necessarily good with the meter because they are grooving it along one particular line and they're using it in some highly specialized category. Well, you should have a broad command of how to use an e-meter, how to do security checks with one, how to clean up various conditions, as I just said, Dianetic assists. How to find out if your wife or your husband's withholding anything from you. You get some frosty treatment or a fight, why stand there and argue? reach for the E-meter. Save an awful lot of time and temper if you did. They've been up to something. Of course, as far as that's concerned, if you started the fight, so have you. But I just point out to you that these most recent developments center immediately and directly around terminals, these three scales, and assessment on those scales. So if you can't do that, why, you're going to have an awful hard time trying to get results on a PC. It just boils down to just that and nothing more. If you're able to assess ably, man, well, you're going to be able to get results. And if you're not, boy, are you going to be slugging. Now, I'll give you some tips on some old cases. This is also something new. When you take a case that has had a lot of auditing, you can be sure that the case has had several terminals run of one kind or another with one process or another. Got that? You're inheriting a case that's been audited before, or you are picking up a case with new technology that you have audited before. Now, here is a way to get this case whirring and whizzing and feeling fine, is cash in on all the assessments ever done with the case. The case has been assessed before on terminals. Find out what these assessments were and what's been run. Take them into the pre-havingness scale and clean them up with the pre-havingness scale, the earliest one first. And just clean it up. Maybe you're going to have to run it at four positions on the pre-havingness scale before you're finally through, flattening it each time. And then pick up the next terminal that got stirred up on this case and exhaust it on the pre-havingness scale. Now, of course, it's wonderful if at the same time you're doing this, you have the PC's havingness and confront, because you just add those into the session and it stabilizes him. You're going to make some remarkable gains, because this sort of a thing has been going on. Terminals have been found and flattened so they don't show. Just nulled, you know, so they don't show. They're not flattened. And they're still in the bank and still in your road. So one of the ways of doing this is to find out what was the first target attacked in, this is E-meter again, because it'll tell you whether it was or wasn't, because it'll now react again. What was the first target attacked that you can remember right now in your being audited by anyone at any time? And a person may say almost anything. They also might say an engram and get somebody way back when. Well, it might be rather adventurous for you to put the engram on the pre-havingness scale, but it wouldn't be at all adventurous for you to run out the engram with what in that incident would you be willing to be. And if there were several engrams run, finish up, for heaven's sakes, after you've run them and finished them, finish up with general beingness, just to get the individual back into PT nicely. Now pick up the terminals assessed on the case and exhaust those. Now, if you wanted to be very, very thorough and you had a lot of time and so forth, and you wanted some big gains of one character or another, you might approach a case this way. But I would say only if the case weren't running like a startled gazelle. If the case were really running, bango, beautifully, smoothly, really getting somewhere with what you had already been doing on the case, I wouldn't bother with this backtrack proposition, because it's probably all getting cleaned up too. But if a case seems boggy and dissatisfied with auditing, instead of knocking their goals apart, let's knock their previous auditing apart. That would seem to be sensible, wouldn't it? Now, that's parasitic auditing. Probably those terminals were left just before the PC was about to get a game. And the reason I say it's very fast to take a case that is boggy and blur and so on is because you could pick up each one of these incipient games and push them on forward, paying attention, of course, at the same time to your rudiments and your model session. This is just a trick. I'm not advising you that this is the finest thing to do, but I will say that a case that thinks he is worse since he was first audited, I would certainly do this to him. That would give you a further springboard on the thing. It is something to do, in other words. We've got some cases around that have been audited by 6, 7, 8 auditors for 300, 400, 500 hours. And is still slugging and can't really get any place. Well, I'd say that was a good thing to do, what I just outlined. Let's go back and let's take up all the auditing from the beginning and clean it up. All right. You've got riches in terms of processes, which just go on and on and on. It isn't so much that there's only one way to audit a case these days. For a little while, we were in this condition. We were in this condition with help. If help was shot, we had it. But we're not in this condition now. And we have innumerable ways to begin a case. Lots of ways. It leaves you a fairly wide power of choice. But in case of doubt, in case of wondering what to do with the case, why, just get the rudiment straightened out. Do a goals assessment. Find the terminal that represents the goal. Get them on the pre-halvingness scale, and then run some process on that level of the scale that will do what you want to have done with the PC. As I've already told you, I've given you a list of commands for that particular scale. These are all quite effective and all fine. But that's no reason those are the commands for that scale. Commands have to be cleared, which may require that commands have to be developed. And if you start shooting commands over into another language, they certainly have to be redeveloped. Do you know that there is no word in Russian for survival? Did you know that? There isn't any at all. What you going to do if you have a pattern command that has survival in it? You're going to have to put together 3, 4 Russian words that tend to mean a continuance in beingness or condition. You have to move it over. Similarly, into other languages, French, German, American, Afrikaans. You're going to have to develop your commands, whether you like it or not. Commands are developed on the basis of flows. Commands that run the PC at cause are best, providing they don't run into flow trouble. What have you done? What have you withheld? That'll run endlessly. Why? Well, it's the PC at cause with the outflow and the inflow. So it just runs dandy. Just runs fine. But what have you helped? 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 Oh, no. In spite of the fact that it's not therapeutic just to keep the flows going on the case, you're going to have to run sooner or later. Who's helped you? You're going to have to get it flowing in. Stuck flows. You run into them once in a while. You can free up a stuck flow. I haven't talked too much about it. But I'll just add that an individual who is in a profession, which is in a one-way flow profession, can always be totally gone whomp with auditing. You can just go bang with auditing on him, if you find out what he's been one-way flowing. And just run recall on it. Recall a one-way flow. Thank you. Recall a one-way flow. Thank you. Of course, you don't phrase it like that. That's it. Fellow's been a waiter. Comes around to the table and sets food on the table. Comes around the table, sets food on the table. Of course, if he gets tipped, that's a little bit of a backflow. That isn't too bad. But let's take this fellow in the factory whose goods are all piled up alongside of him by somebody else, and he puts a piece in the drill press and puts it on the assembly line and it goes away from him. After a while, this fellow will be totally bogged down. He'll have all kinds of odd masses around his body and odd squashes against his face. And you'll say, oh, well, what is this? What is this? Oh, this must be something terribly significant, you know. And you don't bother to ask the fellow if he's ever been on an assembly line or ever been a shipping clerk or something like this. You find out somebody for 20 years has been on a stuck flow. Well, I can tell you, he's in terrible condition. Matter of fact, they had the poor letter reg here at Joburg fixed up so that all she did was write letters. Out went the letters. Out went the letters. She got them out of file folders. Didn't answer any letters. Just wrote letters, wrote letters, wrote letters. When I first came down here, I ordered her to auditing. And then looked this thing over. I found out she never got her mail. I think she's fairly happy these days because she gets her mail. No more complicated than that. But of course, she'd bog down inevitably if all she did was originate, originate, originate. There was no acknowledgement, nothing, nothing whatsoever. Now, some marital situations resolve on a stuck flow basis. A man is supposed to outflow physically. In sex. A woman is supposed to inflow physically in sex. Wow. Just on that, a second dynamic will get loused up. That all by itself will louse it up. You could just run a recall process on the thing if the PC could stand up to it. Just run a recall process. Recall intercourse, thank you. Recall intercourse, thank you. Recall intercourse, thank you. Handle both cases, and all of a sudden you'd find this stuck flow would all of a sudden unstabilize, and something weird and incredible would start happening around the PC's body. Something weird, you know? What's this? Probably impotence in its final analysis is only a stuck flow. All the way in or all the way out. You got the idea? A flow tends to go just so long and then stick, you know? And now it requires real force to get one through the line, you know? This accounts for the savageness of some executives. Nobody ever answers up with a cheery aye-aye or anything, you know? He gets backflash. He doesn't want backflash. He wants compliance, you see? So he gives the order, gets backflash. Well, he doesn't want the backflash, so you see, that's not a flow. And he gives the order, and he gets back. And he doesn't want that. You know, he gives the order. And so they begin to build large rest homes for executives. There's another mechanical trick that has to do with the mind, which you might be quite interested in. It has to do with mass. The losses of large masses. This, of course, exaggerates the flow patterns, since the sudden loss of a large mass will unstabilize almost anybody, slightly. It's the mass, actually. It's not the significance of the thing. And a sudden loss of mass can cause nervous breakdown. It's an enormous shift of mass. It's not so much a shift of attention, it's just a shift of mass. When they start firing astronauts or whatever other fancy word they've got for a plain ordinary rocket jockey out into the outer gee whiz, they're going to find out that they invariably break down. They have tremendous nervous breakdowns and all kinds of mental things. We've got all the answers to the therapy, you know, of space opera. We have a complete space opera therapy. They actually won't get into space without us, so don't worry. Matter of fact, as soon as I get a few more people stably exteriorized, I'm going to drop some more accurate maps of the moon just so they'll have them so they can explore it. But you shoot somebody off at a high velocity. Well, what is this? This is a very rapid change of space, isn't it? Very rapid. And this is accompanied by an enormous loss of mass, namely Earth. These boys have had it right there. They'll go, meow. And all of a sudden somebody says, space pilots are a thing apart. They're a race apart. They're different. Yeah, they're different, all right. They're nuts. I know, I've been in that racket. You almost never get accustomed to it. You just never really quite get accustomed to it. Familiarity can be there. There are tricks you use. You fix your mind upon the planetary mass you are going to reach. You do that very consciously. And you build up a bunch of goals and other things so that your happiness is built up on that. And let them light the fuse. Push the throttles down. It doesn't bother you so much. Because you've got the idea of exchange of mass. But that much change of space, I don't think a humanoid body can stand up to it. They never have. You know how this develops, don't you? The surgery gets better and better. And they start giving people artificial... Nobody can die is the first thing they have to say. And then they get artificial limbs, you see, and artificial throats and artificial lungs and artificial this and artificial that's. And then one fine day they say, well, you know, there's nothing left of that fellow but artificials. They say, isn't that very interesting? And the earliest gingham of flobbits that they call robots and dolls and so forth. You see, a robot is a mechanically operated body. And a doll, in its best analysis, has no electronic assist at all. The Thetan operates it. It's just a shell that a Thetan can operate. But anyway, they get to displacing the liver with machinery, and they get into a fine state of robotism. And then they begin to forget to put the parts in. They finally can draw on the inside shell of one of these things the circuit by which it's supposed to operate. You know, just draw it in lines. It still works. These are tremendous numbers of discoveries. Infinite numbers of Nobel Prizes are issued during this period of time. It takes a long time. Doctors are hailed and... monuments are erected and all this sort of thing. I keep discovering this. And they finally, really, actually discover a Thetan again without recognizing that they have done so at all. And they get a body that will operate without machinery or meat. And just somehow or another they do, and then they say there must be some kind of a motivating unit here. And if you go through just exactly this ritual and tie the cat to the bed, why, somebody will pick the thing up. Only they don't ever really think somebody will pick it up. They say it'll animate. They go through all sorts of incantations and so forth and get this thing animated. Well, actually, the total incantation is some Thetan comes along and says, that looks like it's operable, picks it up and makes it walk. Now, all the time they are doing this, oddly enough, over these many millennia, they are actually educating a whole series of Thetans into the fact that they can operate a body without muscles. And that is the hidden development. The Thetans, by various familiarities, get up to the top. Sometimes everybody gets up to the top, and you have nothing but a population of dolls. Sometimes a few of them get up to the top and get very knowing about the thing and say, well, let's keep our feet on the rest of them and keep nobody else from getting up to the top. And you have what's called a dial-body oligarchy, such as the Markab Society. But this is the way this planet is going right now. It's rather amusing how childishly bug-eyed they are about these marvelous developments and the horrible shocks they're going to get when they first start firing off humanoids into space. It's a long, long, long evolution, not a short one. Now, what you're doing, basically, accustoms an individual, takes the charge off, tremendous numbers of terminals, beingnesses, reorients him on havingness, and puts him into some kind of a shape where he can do again. His be, do, have gets balanced because they become flexible. A fixed beingness and a fixed havingness give you a no-doingness. By making the beingness flexible and the havingness broader, you get an increased doingness. All sorts of things develop out of this. You've got to have a comparative development in beingness, doingness, and havingness if you're going to do anything. Now, after you've got somebody into the state of mess clear, they're reading clear and their bank doesn't kick up and hit them in the face, you've got the whole wide zones of earlier developments. R1, Root 1, creation of human ability. Although there will be further developments along this line of cracking cases, inevitably, you nevertheless have the upper scale already cracked. Exteriorization drills, familiarities of one kind or another have all been done and written up a long time ago. Not enough people were up to even starting on these things in order to make them broadly usable, but they're still there and they're still developed. What we have learned in the past more aptly fits in the future. The development of Dianetics and Scientology has, if anything, been backwards. It went from a medium high to a very high and then started downscale trying to find the undercut and where people lived. Well, we're there now. We've got the undercuts and we know where people live. We'll just remember that the remainder of it has all been developed in the past and that you have it already. So don't lose the old data and say, well, Ron changed his mind all the time. No, Ron has just been seeking new lows. And we've got it now. The data which you've been taught on this ACC, you will find broadly usable. I'm very confident that it could continue to be broadly used for a very, very long time without you running into any serious snags. What I've told you in this lecture are the things you will have to specialize on to make this data work. If this data isn't working, then something is wrong with the way you're approaching rudiments or doing assessments. Okay? Thank you.